President Marcos expected to tackle the economy, the country's pandemic response, among others, in his first State of the Nation address. Later on, the program will be joined by Philippine Ambassador to the U.S., Jose Manuel Romualdez, to discuss Marcos's foreign policy. Anti-Marcos group staged protests ahead of the SONA. We'll have our reporters on the ground to keep us up to speed. Senator Miguel Zubiri elected new Senate president. I'm Rain Musngi. Dateline Philippines begins right now. For those of you watching us on YouTube and Facebook, glad you could join us. Our top story at this hour, all roads lead to the Batasang Pambansa, where President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. will deliver his first State of the Nation address this afternoon. He's expected to tackle major issues facing the country, like inflation, the COVID response, education, and food security. Around 20,000 have been deployed to secure the Batasang Pambansa. Pro and anti-Marcos groups will be holding demonstrations, but they won't be allowed near the venue of the SONA. Well, various groups stage protests in Quezon City ahead of the president's first SONA this afternoon. Let's get an update from our correspondent, Adrian Ayalin. Adrian, over to you.
Hi, Rain. For progressive groups that are staging a protest rally here on Commonwealth Avenue, the true state of the nation, of the country, is that prices of basic commodities are rising, they are expecting President Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. To address this and to mention this in his first State of the Nation address. While this protest rally has been ongoing since 9 o'clock this morning, this started at the University Avenue of the University of the Philippines, where various progressive groups gathered, and then they marched towards here at the corner of Commonwealth Avenue and Tandang Sora. The march and this protest rally featured a Mad in Malacanang effigy depicted by artist Max Santiago, a visual artist of Bayan Muna. Santiago said the design, the effigy, portrays Marcos as a quote-unquote party boy, saying that he is detached from the realities of rising prices of oil, basic commodities such as rice and egg. And among the issues mentioned here in this protest rally are, of course, national sovereignty, independent foreign policy, and fighting disinformation, as well as good governance. These groups are expecting good governance in the administration of President Marcos. Also among the issues mentioned here is the abolition of the National Task Force to end the local communist armed conflict. That is according to the group Karapatan. Various issues such as climate were also discussed here. We are expecting that in a few minutes, the progressive groups will wrap up their protest rally, but they will continue monitoring the events, the speech of President Marcos Jr. In their homes, but there are also some groups which will be holding viewing parties, viewing sessions, such as at the Kilusang Mayo Uno headquarters at 4 this afternoon. So again, we are expecting that the groups here will wrap up their program here. Cultural presentations were also held here, as well as speeches from various sectors, from various groups. And also the concert artists of the Philippines also came here to fight for freedom of speech and for press freedom. That's the latest here on Commonwealth Avenue. Back to you, Rain.
Thank you so much for that report, Adrian Ayalin. Now, with a huge mandate given to President Marcos during the May 2022 national elections comes heavy expectations. Let's now take a look at President Marcos's first few weeks in office as the country's 17th president in this report from Pia Gutierrez.
He inherited a long list of problems with the country desperately trying to recover from the lingering effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. But in his inaugural speech on June 30, Ferdinand Marcos Jr. vowed in all confidence that he is ready to face every challenge that comes with his new role.
I fully understand the gravity of the responsibility that you've put on my shoulders. I do not take it lightly, but I am ready for the task. I will need your help. I want to rely on it. But rest assured, I do not predicate success on the wide cooperation that's needed. I will get it done. You will get no excuses from me.
But Malacanang's new occupant is beginning his term with still an incomplete cabinet. Among the most critical but still unfilled positions is that of the health secretary, with the country still in the middle of the pandemic. It also took quite some time before the president named his energy secretary as the country reels from the effects of a global oil crisis. For now, Marcos Jr. has appointed Health Undersecretary and spokesperson Maria Rosario Vergere as officer in charge of the agency. President Marcos Jr. has also yet to appoint his secretaries for housing as well as science and technology. For political analyst and UP professor Herman Kraft, these delays in appointments may not necessarily mean a lack of urgency on the part of the president.
I get the sense nga na parang maingat sila or masugid sila sa pagpili na sino yung mga tao na ano. Na gusto nilang umpo sa iba't ibang position sa kabinete, no? Kaya lang parang ang ano ibig bang sabihin noon, less ang urgency, no? Or it might just be the case that really vetting people, no? And getting the people that they want, no, to agree is probably taking them quite a bit of time, no? I certainly would agree that they could move a little bit faster on these things.
But while his cabinet remains incomplete, the president's first orders were clear: streamline the bureaucracy and make the government more efficient. Under Executive Orders 1 and 2, Marcos Jr. ordered the abolition of certain offices, such as the Office of the Presidential Spokesperson, the Office of the Cabinet Secretary, and the Presidential Anti-Corruption Commission, or the PACC, which was created during the Duterte administration to help run after corrupt officials in the government. This is but the first step in the right sizing of the entire government workforce.
We're trying, as we attend to immediate concerns, we are also trying to streamline the government so its function is better, its function is much more efficient and easier for the public. So they have to do business, whatever business they have with the government, that it is easier and simpler and safer and more secure to do.
For the new president, the economy will come first during his administration.
So I think we can all understand that the most important area that we will have to deal with will have to be the economy. The central policy, actually, that everybody else will eventually be following will be that set out by our economic managers.
He also wants to address the issue of food security head-on by taking on the agriculture portfolio. But less than a week into office, on July 8th, Malacanang announced that the president tested positive for COVID-19, his second bout with the virus since 2020. His condition forced him to self-isolate for a week, even as he continued work as president. Following his recovery, Marcos Jr. ordered the health department to hasten COVID-19 vaccinations, particularly the administration of booster jabs, amid increasing cases due to the threat of more infectious Omicron subvariants.
Preparasyon na rin ito sa pagbabalik ng face-to-face classes at pagluwag ng iba pang mga safety protocols.
But almost a month into the Marcos presidency, Kraft believes that the administration still needs to set clear goals, at least for the first 100 days.
Of course, the most obvious comparison would be with President Duterte, no, where mula sa kampanya hanggang sa pagpasok niya ng ano, talagang law and order drugs ang focus niyan. We're still getting generic statements. We're still getting general statements about ideas on what this administration would like to do. But we're still not sure where it really wants to go. No? Hindi pa rin natin sigurado kung ano yung mangyayari in the first 100 days. We now have President Marcos. No? He cannot just do or repeat what candidate Marcos was doing before.
Along with political observers, the entire country will be watching the new president when he delivers his State of the Nation address on Monday, where they will look for answers to the country's myriad of problems with every word, plan, and promise that he delivers. Pia Gutierrez, ABS-CBN News.
Political analysts and officials of other countries will eagerly await details of President Marcos's foreign policy in his first State of the Nation address. Joining us now for a discussion on this is Philippine Ambassador to the U.S., Jose Manuel Romualdez. Mr. Ambassador, good afternoon and grateful you could join us.
Thank you, Rain. Thank you for inviting me.
May we know what you're expecting President Marcos will convey on foreign policy in his first SONA? Did your cousin consult you on the messaging for the international audiences?
Well, I wasn't really consulted, but he did discuss with me and with the others, with Secretary Manalo, on what he views as the foreign policy of the Philippines, which is essentially is the same in terms of an independent foreign policy, but more aggressively in terms of what we want to do with other countries, our relationships, and making sure that economy is number one in his list of what we'd like to have, which means more economic activity between our allies like the United States and including China, of course, and the ASEAN region. That's foremost in his mind in what he wants to be able to establish as his foreign policy and making stronger economic ties between all our neighbors and our friends.
Ambassador, from the inaugural, observers note that Marcos seems to be moving toward a foreign policy reset. And as you mentioned before, to write his story and not rewrite history. Has he indicated a vision to you and how to operationalize that?
Well, I think it's very clear. I've always said history is written by those who write it. It is written by those who actually they determine history. He is now going to be writing history by being the President of the Republic, 17th President, and he would like to be able to make his mark on how our country will go in the next 6 years. He also has a long vision. You know, one of the things that President Marcos has always had in his mind is that he would like to see our country really go up to the first level of what we call a first world country. It is an ambition, it is a dream, but I think it's something that he would like to start. And that's why economy is his number one, I guess you could say that that's number one in the pillar of his many plans for the country in the future. Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, has the U.S. communicated what kind of reset or transformation they'd like to see in the new Philippine administration?
Well, I think President Marcos, in various visits coming from, first and foremost, a visit coming from the Deputy Secretary of State, and of course, even the call coming from President Biden just when he won the presidency, and now with a new ambassador. He has indicated to them that he would really like to see, he sees our security agreement or our mutual defense treaty and our visiting forces agreement. That's something that we don't have to discuss anymore at this point in time. We've had that in place. What is important, as I said, is that he would like to see, for instance, climate change is a very important part of his plan for the future, because he knows that climate change affects the Philippines foremost. Every time there is obviously the weather disturbance, the Philippines is, as he says, the dubious distinction of being one of the first countries that gets really hit hard by climate change. So climate change is also part of what the United States would like to do. They're playing a major role in trying to help countries mitigate the climate change. And so we're going into clean energy. That's one of the projects that the United States would like to bring to the country, one of which I've always mentioned is, I know that this is still perhaps far ahead, maybe 5 years from now, but the modular nuclear power plants, which the United States is developing with other countries like South Korea, is one of those that we would like to see come into the Philippines. And as you know, energy is going to be one of the major requirements that we will be having in the future. Mm-hmm.
Since you mentioned already the mutual defense treaty, you know, some lawmakers would still like to see a change in that. New House resolutions numbers 18 and 20 seeking to abrogate the Visiting Forces Agreement and Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, VFA and EDCA, in a move to cut the alleged unbridled U.S. military operations and abuses of the U.S. here in the Philippines. This is happening even as the Philippine and U.S. military officials both wish to expand the Salaknib military exercises. Has there been any discussion with President Marcos on the continuation of these agreements with the U.S., as had been repeatedly questioned by the former administration?
Well, I think that very clearly these agreements are something to always subject to for review by not only our legislative branch, but even the executive branch. But, you know, this the review is really more like every year the VFA is being reviewed by
Ambassador.
We have continuous exchanges between our military. Yes.
All right.
Can you hear me?
We lost you for a moment there. Hello? But please continue.
Yeah. No, as I was saying that the review is always, every year there's always a review of our mutual defense, not mutual defense treaty, but the VFA, which is a yearly meeting that we have. We have a bilateral strategic dialogue with the United States, which happens every year. In fact, this year we're going to host it here in the Philippines. And in those discussions, we always look at what can we do to make it better and improve on what all these agreements are all about. Our military, we have exchanges almost every month, every week. We have a lot of our military people coming to Washington, D.C. on a regular basis for continuing consultations. All that is part and parcel of the kind of relationship that we have with the United States as far as our mutual defense treaty and our security arrangements are concerned. So I don't see any reason why we could even look at abrogating this. We've already done that, and then we went back to it because there is value in it. And our military sees a lot of value in this kind of agreements that we have with the United States. It's good for our military.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we have U.S. lawmakers wanting to block PNP aid for human rights violations reportedly here in the Philippines. Do we know what and how much in aid could not be going the way of the Philippine National Police from the U.S. budgets, and what kind of
PNP growth, houses built, higher school test scores, and middle class expanded are the metrics that should gauge our performance instead of likes, shares, and views.
Senator Joel Villanueva was elected majority leader. Meanwhile, the Senate minority bloc will now only be composed of new minority leader Coco Pimentel and Senator Risa Ontiveros. Back to our talk with Philippine Ambassador to the United States, Jose Manuel Babe Romualdez. Ambassador, we were saying that U.S. lawmakers want to block PNP aid for human rights violations. Do we know what and how much in aid could not be going the way of the Philippine National Police from U.S. budgets? How it will impact the PNP, and what criteria will U.S. lawmakers be watching for to keep this budget flowing?
Okay, well, first and foremost, that was passed in the lower house of the U.S. Congress. It'll still have to go through the U.S. Senate. From the understanding we have with some of our friends in the U.S. Senate, they will most likely water it down at the least and possibly not pass it. The reason for that is because we have a new administration here in the Philippines, and certainly President Marcos has made it very clear from the very beginning that human rights and all the other issues that were being thrown our way will be looked into very seriously by his administration. So I think it's incumbent upon the U.S. Congress to let this administration do what it's supposed to do. But then again, just for any reason that they would like to hold any aid to our PNP, as they say, they're not the only game in town. We can get other things that we need from other countries, like what former President Duterte did in the rifles that we needed. We decided to buy from other countries, and we can do the same in this new administration. But I think the United States Congress is very fair in looking at what this new administration will do in the next 6 months or a year as far as all the issues that are being thrown our way. And they're prepared to listen.
Mm-hmm. Of course, well, the ICC also putting the pressure on this new administration, calling on the Philippine government to comment on the reopening of the drug war probe from the Duterte administration. The DOJ says it is already collecting data for its response. There are also calls for President Marcos to rejoin the ICC. Has President Marcos conveyed the direction he is going, or would it improve the Philippines' standing on the international stage, if not its perceived human rights conditions?
Well, as far as the ICC is concerned, that is something that will have to be studied, of course, by this new administration. And I am, from what I'm told, our Justice Secretary Remulla is looking into that. Also, our Solicitor General, who also was the Justice Secretary during the time of President Duterte, Menardo Guevara, is also involved in looking into all these things. All that will come into fruition in the next couple of months on how we're going to proceed as far as the ICC is concerned.
Mm-hmm. All right. In the last administration, the U.S. had been instrumental in bringing crucial vaccines to the Philippines at the beginning of the pandemic, along with military, intelligence, and other assistance against terrorism and insurgency, all part of this continuing U.S. pivot to Asia. Do you see this as possibly changing in the coming years?
Oh, as a matter of fact, I think it's even going to increase. We have a very strong relationship with the United States as far as cooperation in intelligence gathering, and we will continue to do so. This is the indication that was given to me by our friends in Washington, D.C. They would like to see more activity as far as they're concerned, because they have been, we have been very effective in our intelligence gathering, especially when it comes to activities in the South where potential terrorist activities could possibly come from. And also, even on other areas where there's a strong cooperation, I see that increasing in the next couple of years. And I think President Marcos will see that this kind of relationship or agreement that we have as far as our military is concerned, it's been very helpful, especially in many areas in our country.
In fact, in terms of intelligence, there was actually one of the specific concerns that some groups had mentioned, that U.S. military drones being used on Philippine soil. Has this been specified in your talks with your U.S. counterparts, Ambassador?
Well, the drones are part and parcel of agreements that we've had in the past. These drones are mainly used to surveillance purposes, not on our citizens, but more on security. These are all part and parcel, again, of our total security arrangement that we have with an ally like the United States. And mind you, this is not only with the United States. We also have the same kind of arrangement with Australia and even Japan and other countries that we have a relationship with, including Indonesia in the South. So all these types of agreements is really universal in nature. We are all together in this to make our border secure and our area, the ASEAN region, secure.
So there's no chance, no talks of these drones being eliminated from the security package?
Well, I can't really speak for that. Our intelligence people will have to make that decision. But as of now, I see that as a useful tool in intelligence gathering. I think drones are commonly used nowadays for intelligence operations But there are more sophisticated type of equipment that's been supplied to us, not only by the United States, but also by Israel, another allied country or a friend of ours that has been, their technology on surveillance equipment has been superb, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. The entry of a new U.S. ambassador to the Philippines, acknowledging a rocky relationship with the Marcoses in the past, I think there has been initial pronouncements, or she has made initial pronouncements, as you mentioned, on climate change, as well as pandemic response or vaccines, food security and the economy, all but infrastructure, which China had promised to be a strong partner on. Of course, that's a subject to debate now. Is this an area which could be explored further with the U.S., or how quickly do you see the other plans being concretized with the U.S.?
The United States is not the only country that can actually finance many of the projects that we need as far as infrastructure is concerned. Of course, as an ally, they are prepared to come in and helping us or develop these areas, even in the digital space. There are other countries that are very much with us as far as infrastructure is concerned. Japan is our number one partner, as a matter of fact, right now. They have been the country that has given us a substantial project that is now ongoing, as you know, the subway system. And, mm-hmm. and in fact, from what I'm told by our economic team, they're looking at other projects that Japan would be able to finance in the future as far as the infrastructure is concerned. So it's open. As President Marcos has said, countries where we have a relationship with would reach out to other countries, not only to our old allies, but many new friends that we have that are prepared to come into the Philippines. The Economic Union, the European Union, is also prepared to come in and invest in the country. So there are a lot of things that are going on, and all of this, of course, will come into play in the next couple of months that this administration is going into.
Mm-hmm. And at a more friendly and lower rate, such as 0.2%. Meanwhile, does the U.S. see the perceived closeness of China with the Marcoses as a threat to its relationship with the Philippines? With the image of the diplomatic office of China at Marcos's bailiwick, is it something that the U.S. would want to match or supersede or get assurances on, perhaps?
I don't think that that's really an issue. The United States is well aware that we have not only President Marcos has a good relationship with China from way back, but because we have made it clear that whichever country is prepared to work with us as far as our economy is concerned is very much welcome. Mm-hmm. And the United States sees that merely as a, perhaps, of course, a competition. And the United States is prepared to also come in and help in coming out with projects that would be feasible for not only for us, but even for them. There's the Development Finance Corporation of the United States that's has been just newly formed, and they're going to be, they're here now in the Philippines as far as looking at projects, most especially when it comes to, in relation to clean energy. So, again, these relationships with many countries is welcome to us, and countries like the United States and China, they may compete, and we welcome the competition, but we'll come out with whoever is best that can offer us something that will be good for our country.
Finally, Ambassador, with your indulgence, we understand that there is an invitation to President Marcos. Will he pursue a visit to and meetings with the U.S. and China and other countries who have invited him?
That is part of his plan. I think the Department of Foreign Affairs, headed by Secretary Rick Manalo, will be discussing that with the President in the coming weeks to see which countries the president will visit first. As you know, foreign relations is also a very important part of our what this administration will have to do, since he's the new president. There are many leaders all over the world who would like to meet him personally. And so these invitations have been sent out to him. And I think the Department of Foreign Affairs is now coming out with a list of which countries would probably be first, and then as we go down the line. But of course, as you know, President Marcos has said on many occasions that he would like to work on the domestic issues, get it going, and then perhaps there is probably one or two trips that he may have to take earlier or sooner than later because of its importance. But at the end of the day, these trips are going to be very important for our country.
Well, hopefully we see more clarity at the sauna and in the coming weeks. Philippine Ambassador to the U.S., Jose Manuel Romualdez, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Rain. Thank you for inviting me. Yeah, thank you.
The election of President Marcos's cousin, Congressman Martin Romualdez, as the next House Speaker, expected to be just a formality. ABS-CBN's Katrina Domingo now on the line to tell us more. Kat, go ahead.
Hi, Ray. Not much drama in the opening of session here in the House of Representatives this year compared to previous openings in the previous years, where there was a sort of power struggle or a tug of war between power blocks here in the House of Representatives. This time around, later Representative Ferdinand Martin Romualdez ran and opposed for the chamber's top position. Romualdez, who is the cousin of President Ferdinand Marcos Jr., was nominated by no less than his nephew, first son, and Ilocos Norte Representative Ferdinand Alexander Sandro Marcos. In Marcos's nomination speech, he underscored his uncle's 12 years of experience here in the chamber, including Romualdez's stint as majority leader in the previous Congress. Representative Marcos says Romualdez was instrumental in the passage of two Bayanihan laws, which helped provide additional funds for the government during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020 and also in 2021. Now, lawmakers who seconded that nomination include Batangas Representative Ralph Recto, Las Piñas Representative Camille Villar, and Pampanga Representative Aurelio Dong Gonzalez. This gives us a signal that most of the major political parties here in the House of Representatives are very supportive of the new administration. Now, Rain, former President and Pampanga Representative Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, who is the chairperson emeritus of La Casa CMD, of course, expectedly voted for Romualdez, who is also part of La Casa CMD. Arroyo, however, was not able to personally attend this morning's proceedings as she tested positive for COVID-19 recently. The former president's voice, however, was overheard in the speakers registering her support for Romualdez's speakership bid. So far, Rain, Albay Representative Edsel Lagman was among the few lawmakers who registered a no vote, saying he is part of a genuine opposition. We also expect members of the Macabayan Bloc to also vote against Romualdez or abstain from voting. Rain, just to give context to our viewers, since there are no other candidates for the speakership, lawmakers who would decline to vote for Romualdez would be deemed as members of the independent bloc for now and may have to discuss among themselves who will sit as minority leader eventually. We have to wait for the final count to verify how many actually declined to support Romualdez's speakership bid. Rain, right now, proceedings are still ongoing, and Romualdez has yet to formally ascend to the rostrum as the chamber opted to hold a nominal voting instead of a viva voce vote. This means that each member of the House of Representatives is called to approach the podium and cast their votes, whether for or against Romualdez. This makes the proceedings quite lengthy compared to holding just a viva voce vote, wherein the Secretary General or the officials of the chamber just ask the entire body, on whether they are for or against a particular candidate. Now, Rain, among the notable personalities who attended the opening of session here include Vice President Sara Duterte, who turned heads specifically because she was already donning a Bagobo Tagabawa tribal dress, which originated from her hometown in Davao City. Rain, just a few observations here. We earlier received a memorandum or a notice that surgical masks are not allowed to be worn here. They recommend wearing N95 masks or KF94 masks. But we saw the Vice President herself and several other members of Congress wearing these surgical masks. That's the latest here from the House of Representatives. Rain.
Thank you so much for that report, Katrina Domingo from the Batasang Pambansa. And we're just taking a short break. We'll have more on President Marcos's first State of the Nation address when we return. This is Dateline Philippines. Stay with us. Welcome back to Dateline Philippines. For more on the security situation at the Batasang Pangbansa, we'll be speaking now with Police General Remus Medina. He's the District Director of the Quezon City Police District. Sir, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
And thank you so much for joining us. So the rally permit of the protesters and demonstrators are supposed to be only until 12 noon. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right, ma'am. But until now, there's a heavy rain, they are now slowly dispersing themselves. And it's a good note that they were able to follow what they had agreed.
What had been the experience with the protesters and demonstrators since early this morning when they started their demonstrations?
Yes, they're peacefully having their program starting 8 o'clock afternoon. But right now, they have slowly dispersed, and we can now focus on the pro-BBM situated in HOR.
Sir, can you give us an idea, where are the anti-Marcos protesters now? Where are they? In which area are they concentrated? What was the peak of their numbers?
The area that was given to them by the LGU where they can help their program is in Tantansora only. Mm-hmm. They have a time given allotted for them from 8 o'clock until 12 o'clock. And then my rough estimate is they are around 4,000 rallies. And right now, they are now slowly dispersing because of the heavy rain here in Tandangsora.
Mm-hmm. Do you see the same dispersal happening with the pro-Marcos demonstrators?
Yes. Yes. Hopefully, they will start their program 2 o'clock until 6, and hopefully they can conduct their program peacefully, and then we'll be also watching them. I will be providing them assistance if they want.
Do you have an estimate for how many the rallies are on the pro-Marcos side?
Yeah, according to them, when they made their coordination, their crowd estimate maybe around 10,000.
Okay, so their rally permit is for until what time, sir?
Their rally permit is beginning 2 o'clock, and then the time that they can have until 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. So yes. right now, what is the condition of the zip lanes that we have in and around Commonwealth Avenue?
Yes, the road here leading to HOR is doing good because we're able to provide a cheaper lane for VIP, and the motorists, they can freely pass through this Commonwealth. And since the LGU of Quezon City declared a non-working and all levels, the class at all levels were suspended. So at least that motorists are lessened, and it's good for us that we can now manage the traffic smoothly.
Have there been any violations or untoward incidents from the side of the rallyists or even the motorists for the whole day so far?
No incidents of violations from the motorists, except that maybe some of them are not familiar with it. But there are lots of PNP, MMDA, and public order from public order sector from LUU. We're manning the traffic. That right now, is, the traffic is slowly doing good and free-flowing.
All right. Hopefully that continues throughout the day. QCPD District Director General Remus Medina, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much, also.
We'll catch up with you again later on. Meanwhile, the Philippine police are now on standby for the conduct of a mini-concert for pro-Marcos supporters along IBP Road in Batasan. Jackie Manabat is on the line for more details. Jackie, over to you.
Rain, despite the sudden downpour here at the side of Batasan, here at the IBP Road, the crowd starts to pour in for the mini-concert for President Marcos' first sauna. The stage is set and the security is already tight. And we have seen front acts now playing on stage. The police here, or were here since 3 this morning. This IBP Road is over 500 meters away from the Batasan complex where President Ferdinand Marcos will deliver his first sauna. This area could accommodate around 5 to 6,000 individuals. That's according to the estimates of the police officers here. They have adjusted the location of the stage a bit farther away from the Batasan complex so as to better secure the area. Now, who's the concert for? If we look at the lineup of the bands that will be playing today, one of them is Plethora. This is the band that played one of Marcos Jr.'s campaign jingle, Bagong Silang. The police officers are expecting Marcos supporters to show up. The police said that they will observe maximum tolerance if ever a riot ensues. And if they see a possible scenario that a disturbance might occur, female police officers will step in and command the front lines. QCPD Station Chief Lieutenant Colonel Elizabeth Jasmine said those who will disturb the peace will be met with smiles. Now, they will also distribute face masks, bottled water and candies to calm them down. Rain, looking at the monitoring board of the police officers here at the IBP Road, there will be around 300 police officers that are deployed to secure the area, and half of them are from the QCPD Station 10. Back to you, Rain.
Thank you so much for that report, Jackie Manabat. On to business now. Dennis Uy's Udena Corporation continues to deny that another Uy-owned company, the Clark Global City Corporation, was ever in default. In a statement, the company said it already settled the $4 million debt of CGCC to the government-controlled Clark Airport today, July 25. It adds the bank lender consortium led by BDO has also been satisfied. Udena points out it paid ahead of the July 27 deadline. Earlier today, Uy-owned listed companies also came out with corporate disclosures assuring the public that their operations will not be affected by the issue. Meanwhile, majority lender BDO said in a statement, CGCC has assured it is updating obligations to Clark Airport. BDO also says the obligations are secured and a default will not have any material or adverse effect on the financial condition and business of BDO. Looking at the performance of the stocks at the midday break, BDO share prices down 4.8%, Dito down 5.15%. We have Chelsea Logistics down 10.24%, Phoenix Petroleum down 10.02%. Meanwhile, an oil price rollback set for a third straight week. Diesel prices will see the biggest cut of 1 peso and 85 centavos per liter, while kerosene prices will go down by up to 1 peso and 30 centavos per liter. Gasoline prices will see a 40 centavo decrease. Global oil prices dropped last week on a weakening demand outlook as major central banks continue to tighten monetary policy. Supply fears also eased after Libya resumed production at several oil fields. On to sports now. Philippine Olympic pole vaulter EJ Obiena flies high again, this time at the World Athletics Championships being held at the U.S. state of Oregon. Our North America Bureau Chief TJ Monotok joins us with details. TJ, good morning.
Good morning, Rain, in Manila, and good evening here from Eugene, Oregon, where at the World Athletic Championships, we witnessed history as EJ Obiena made his best performance ever, winning a bronze medal at the pole vault competition here in Eugene, Oregon, as he bested 9 other compatriots in the top 12 in the finals to get the bronze medal today. It was not an easy task for Ije Obiena because he also reached a record in terms of a personal high in terms of the 5.94 meter jump. That is his personal and Philippine best. That is also an Asian record. And EJ was able to tell us afterwards that he actually didn't even think of the height. He knows that it's a height he's never hit before. He knows it's a height that he doesn't usually hit in practice as well. But he was so close even for getting a silver medal in the competition. He had a chance. If he had made the jump at 6 meters flat, he would have beaten the eventual silver medalist, Chris Nielsen of USA. And of course, Mondo Duplantis of Sweden got the gold medal as he is ahead of the pack. But a historic day for the Philippines, for Ije Obiena. He told me that he just could not believe how happy he was to get this achievement, especially after all the controversies that he and the Philippine Track and Field Association have gone through in many months. And this is just such a sweet victory for him and the new leadership of Patapa. He just wanted to thank the Filipino fans who have always been supportive of him, who have always believed him. And, you know, he came into this tournament ranked number 6 in the world, and now he's proven he is, at least today, one of the top 3 pole vaulters in the world. It's a victory he will cherish as he will continue to work hard and go for his goal of getting another medal as well in the Paris Olympics the next couple of years. Rain?
Grateful to EJ for adding to Filipino pride. TJ Manotok reporting to us live from the U.S. Thank you so much. On to entertainment now. Disney surprises fans with an announcement of new Marvel superhero movies. During Saturday's Comic-Con, Disney said it will release 2 new Avengers films, The Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars, in 2025. Disney also offered fans a first glimpse at its upcoming Black Panther sequel. For more on the story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rain Musngi. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Stay safe, everyone, and keep it here on the News Channel.